Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. There was a fresh reminder this week that it will take a long time to slow the deadly opioid addiction crisis here in Massachusetts and across much of the nation, for that matter. Despite extensive efforts to combat the addiction crisis, new figures from the State Department of Public Health show that the death toll continues to rise. During the first half of this year in Massachusetts, 684 people died of opioid overdoses. That's close to four people every day, an increase of 6% over last year. And it's more than four times the number of people killed in car crashes during the same period. Earlier today, we spoke to Massachusetts Congresswoman Catherine Clark about this crisis and about her legislation just passed by the U.S. Senate that seeks to help the youngest victims of opiate addiction, newborn babies.
This bill will standardize, bring together the best treatments, and hopefully begin to really put the research in for the way that we can control the surge of NAS births and make sure that these babies and their moms have the best outcomes they can.
Now tell us what NAS births are.
Neonatal abstinence syndrome. We commonly refer to it as NAS. That is describing the syndrome when babies are born addicted to opiates. It can cause severe seizures, tremors. It is a pain of withdrawal that adults describe as the worst they've experienced in their lives. And this is being experienced by very, very tiny babies when they're first born.
The latest figures from the Massachusetts Department of Public Health reveal that opioid addiction remains a big problem across the state. And I wanted to ask you about what Governor Baker's proposing, legislation that would limit prescriptions for painkillers and allow hospitals to hold addicts involuntarily for up to 3 days. There has been some pushback to the second part of that proposal. Do you think it's a good idea?
I think one of the great ideas that's come out of this, that Governor Baker has really been charged behind, is looking at our medical training and how we can better train our doctors on prescription opiates and how we can both manage patients' pain but make sure that we are not continuing to feed this epidemic of addiction. The commitment issue, restricting pain medication, we want to go slowly. We want to make sure we don't have unintended consequences that create further problems down the line.
Yeah, and among those, are hospitals staffed up sufficiently to take that on? Because it's a big commitment for hospitals.
It is a big commitment, and that has been something that we've looked at in the legislation. How can we make sure that we have hospitals that understand this, that know what they're dealing with, and have the resources to deal with it? Just with the births alone of NAS infants, that's a $1.5 billion cost per year. And 80% of that is paid with Medicaid dollars. So not only is there a real human crisis, but there's a financial component that goes with this as well.
Yeah. Let me move on and ask you about the leadership in the House. Last night, Republican Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan announced that he would run for Speaker of the House. This comes, of course, after a long period of uncertainty about who's going to lead the House of Representatives. I know you're in the minority party, obviously, but do you think Representative Ryan is the right choice for the majority? Will he be able to lead?
Well, it's been interesting to watch the chaos in their leadership and watching people not being willing to step up. It feels very much like the agenda of not only the Republican conference, but of our country is being run by a few dozen of the most extreme members of the Republican Party. And I certainly am hopeful that Paul Ryan is going to be able to change course. And, you know, I've watched very carefully and with great interest as he talks about balancing his work family. And I hope that this indicates that he is going to have a change of heart and make sure that these issues and what he's talking about for his own family, that he's going to get behind the policies to make it available to every family.
But what about the basic dynamic in Washington, in the House of Representatives. And you mentioned it, this core group of conservative members of the Freedom Caucus that are able to hold such big sway. Can Paul Ryan, are you optimistic at all that he can sort of change the basic dynamic that has paralyzed things in many ways?
I think I would characterize it as I will continue to be hopeful. But I'm not optimistic. I think that just the way his speakership has arisen, sort of laying down conditions, most of which were met, some of which were not, I don't really see how he's in a situation to meet with more success than Speaker Boehner did. You know, I was hopeful that we would see perhaps a major change in leadership and that there would be some reaching out to the minority to bring a more consensus leadership. And as we continue to see the infighting in the Republican conference, every day we're taking a step closer to a real fiscal cliff for our country.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because, of course, we're approaching this key deadline of November 3rd when the U.S. will reach its legal debt limit. That means another showdown in Congress over the debt limit. And this week, that group of Republicans, the House Freedom Caucus, said it won't support an increase of the debt limit unless it's accompanied by major spending cuts. Let's listen to Secretary of the Treasury Jack Lew speaking this week on CNBC. Here's what he said.
I think it's very important to remember that only Congress can act to raise the debt limit. I will have used all the tools that I have as of November 3rd, and then we're operating on cash. And just think about it. We have a government of the United States, it's a $4 trillion a year enterprise, where swings of a few billion dollars can determine whether or not you have enough cash to pay your bills. It's ridiculous. The debt limit needs to be raised.
So is that going to happen?
I don't see how we can't do it, but I really think it is up to the majority and whether they can put aside their infighting and get back to work for the American people. This is the full faith and credit of the United States on the line. You know, this is just not living up to the responsibilities, the fundamental responsibilities of Congress.
Well, let me ask you about one more issue before I let you go. Yesterday, Hillary Clinton spent more than 8 hours being grilled by members of the Select House Committee investigating the 2012 attack on the American diplomatic mission in Benghazi, Libya, that killed four Americans, including the U.S. ambassador. Republicans wanted to know if, as Secretary of State, she should have done more to protect the embassy. So here's Trey Gowdy of South Carolina.
Why were there so many requests for more security personnel and equipment, and why were those requests denied in Washington? What policies were we pursuing in Libya that required a physical presence in spite of the escalating violence?
What's your response to this hearing?
You know, I think that Hillary Clinton put it best at the end, where she made a plea that we move away from partisanship and return to statesmanship. And I think that the comments of Kevin McCarthy and some of the other Republicans that at the root of this is partisan politics, that this is all about who will be in the White House next, not about honoring the lives that were lost in Benghazi and trying to take some lessons about how we can improve security for those public servants who serve our country in sometimes very dangerous situations.
Well, you know, looking beyond the obvious politics of the hearings, I mean, are there lessons that we should take away from what happened in Benghazi? And if so, what are they?
The sad thing, Anthony, is that I'm not sure that I can answer that question because so much of what's been happening hasn't been public. Those transcripts haven't been released. But so much of this focus has been on Hillary Clinton and trying to find her responsible, trying to have a gotcha moment with her, that I think that those lessons have really been lost.
All right. Well, that's Congresswoman Catherine Clark. She represents the 5th District here in Massachusetts. Catherine Clark, thanks so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Anthony.
And stay with us. Coming up, author Margaret Atwood is in town for the Boston Book Festival, and she joins us to talk about her latest novel, The Heart Goes Last. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.